This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Never settle. Unless it's into the electrifying BMW i4. Blend the lines of cutting-edge and classic with groundbreaking technology at your fingertips. And experience M-engineered precision while you twist around every turn. After all, electric doesn't have to be static. If you thought EVs couldn't live up to your expectations, then you've never experienced the ultimate electric driving machine. The 100% electric 2025 BMW i4.
Hurry into the BMW President's Day sales event and receive exceptional offers through March 2nd.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you get a cancer diagnosis, your world stops. But not Fox Chase Cancer Center. When the science moves quickly, we move quicker. Because cancer is all we do. From the molecular level to the human level, we stay focused on your unique cancer. Not just following the science, but discovering new paths forward. Giving you a head start on better outcomes. Learn more at foxchase.org/where you start. Because where you start matters.
30% chance for showers today, 50% tomorrow, 80% Wednesday, highs near 80 all 3 days. Then a 80% chance for showers on Thursday, highs of only 70, 66 Friday. Then warm again Saturday with a chance for rain with highs of 80. And by Monday, all of this settles down to a high of 55 and sunshine. So it's going to be a kind of stormy week, but no real parades, I don't think, this week. So there you go. It'll work out. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL.com analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. He'll be second-guessing this evening with Bobby Hebert, a doubleheader, kind of like the Silver Slipper on the beach, Hancock County, Mississippi. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine, Tommy. Yeah, we back two shows in 3 days.
Did you enjoy that nail-biter yesterday?
Yeah, it sort of reminded me a little bit of 2014. I think it was Super Bowl 48 when Seattle beat the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. Peyton Manning on that Denver team. I think that one ended up being 43-8. It sort of reminded me of that game. I know the Chiefs were able to score two late scores, but it total domination, and you won up front. How many times, you know, we've done this show for years, talked about if you don't win up front, offensive, defensive line, you ain't going anywhere. And as good as the Chiefs are, they made yesterday Pat Mahomes look mere mortal because they could not block the Eagles' defensive line and Eagles offensive line, I mean, they've been good all year long. They were really good again, but I thought the story yesterday was really the Eagles defensive front. And Tommy, they did not blitz one time in that game, not a once. And look, all the pressure. They play a lot of zone defense. And so you rush four and you drop back seven. But yesterday it looked, it's almost like the illusion of it looked like they had six guys rushing the quarterback. What it looked like to Mahomes.
I didn't understand.
You couldn't block them.
Why Mahomes didn't try to run more? And I understand that it seemed like he would hold the ball and he tried to step up in the pocket. But if he had been committed to run, I thought that would have neutralized the rush. And if they had rolled him to one side or the other, I thought that could have neutralized the rush. But for whatever reason, they didn't want to do it.
Well, no matter what they'd have done yesterday, I'm just telling you, that defense, the way they've played the last few weeks, they were really hellacious. And they came after you in waves. And again, it's not all these all-out blitzes. It's basically beating you with four guys up against your five. And
they didn't just beat them. They picked them up and moved them back. This was a whooping. That was not pretty. It was ugly.
Yeah, and Vic Fangio, man, go back a long time. Vic was in the USFL with the Philadelphia Baltimore Stars with Jim Mora. He came here. He had the moniker of linebackers coach, but he really handled the outside linebackers, Ricky Jackson, Pat Swilling, because Sidwell handled the inside linebackers. And he finally gets that elusive Super Bowl ring. Vic's been chasing that a long time. And goes to show you, you can't feel sorry for yourself in life. Nope. You know, he kind of gets run out of Miami last year. Things didn't work out for him. He was a one-time head coach. That didn't work out. And yet, look, just a masterful job of coaching that defense yesterday of the Eagles and putting people in the right place. Now, you need the horses. You need players to win. But, man, you got to put them in the right spot. And I just thought yesterday that game was won by the Eagles defensively.
Jalen Hurts had a pretty good game, too. Offensively, he ran when he had to, and it seemed like, again, it's like, well, Pat, maybe you should look at what Jalen's doing, try a little bit of that.
I thought, you know, and the other thing, too, is he did get some short fields. The defense sort of set him up. But, man, Jalen Hurts, you talk about another guy that, okay, life's never going to be easy. Mm-hmm. Now, he was this highly recruited quarterback. He goes to Alabama. He becomes a starter. He loses the job at halftime of the national championship game to Georgia. And Tua, comes in and kind of takes over, leaves. He goes to Oklahoma. And, you know, a lot of people didn't think he would play quarterback in the NFL, that he would be a hybrid-type player, similar to Taysom Hill. And he wins, you know, the MVP of the Super Bowl. And then you talk about a good guy in life. He's a good guy in life. His dad was a former coach. He actually coached offensive line, his dad. Mm-hmm. And so he learned that work ethic, that toughness from his dad, and did a great job. I thought a couple years back, he outplayed Mahomes. The only problem is they gave Mahomes a shot late, and he was able to catch him. But, man, Jalen Hurts did a fantastic job. The one thing I give the Chiefs, for the most part, defensively, they didn't let Saquon Barkley kind of take over the game. But other than that, I mean, you know, it was a dominating performance by the Eagles from every aspect you could look at.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Mike Dettelier is our guest talking about the Super Bowl. Y'all got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. Mike, I said it was a nail-biter, and it really was if you bet the over, because toward the end of the game...
Well, you got it.
I was concerned. My concern was that the Chiefs were going to turn it over, and then the Eagles were going to fall on the ball and run out the clock. That did not happen, and the over hit, and everything ended happy, but... I'll never bet football again because, honestly, I would rather have had a root canal. Even though I won pretty big yesterday, I would have rather had a root canal than go through what I went through. 620 Traffic Now, WWL. 625 Tommy Tucker, WWL. Beck with Mike Dettelier. Talking about the Super Bowl yesterday, Mike's going to be second-guessing over at the Silver Slipper Casino tonight. Two shows, 3 days. That's in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. Head out there. Is that the last one, Mike? For the season?
This is the last one, yeah, until we back the Monday after the NFL draft.
It's amazing how quickly it goes by, huh, the season?
It's in the blink of an eye. We're talking about I told this to Dave Hilbert from there. It's like you looking so forward to the season. It's such a gap between when it ends and when it starts again. The one thing this offseason, though, because of so many changes with the Saints. I mean, I think off season is going to be much more eventful than the in season.
This is true, especially maybe today we'll get an announcement. What do you think?
I don't know about today. I think that a lot of times with maybe whatever they've talked about before, that to let him go enjoy himself with the parade and everything else in Philly and then come on back midweek and make the official announcement. But if you listen to Jeffrey Lurie last night, the owner of the Eagles, he was asked about, looks as though you'll lose Kellen Moore. And he was like, yeah, it looks to be that that's the case. And so, yeah, I think, you know, you got a little details to iron out. But I think by midweek, you'll get that official announcement with Kellen Moore. And then he's got to come up with a staff. And that's why, and, you know, for a Super Bowl champ, it's the blink of an eye and enjoy it because it's, the team you saw this year, you don't necessarily see again. It's not going to be exactly the same. You lose coaches, you lose players. Some of the guys that have had big seasons cash in, and they go to another team. Hey, I got my ring. I won a championship. Remember a couple years ago, the Eagles lost to the Chiefs. They lost both their offensive and defensive coordinator after the game. One went to Indianapolis. The other one was the head coach with the Arizona Cardinals, just stayed in Arizona. So it's a great ride for Philly and for Nick Sirianni and his crew. And, man, Howie Roseman, again, did a great job of assembling that football team as the GM. It's about players, and they got them. But you never see the same team again. That's what free agency and the commuter world, the NFL, is all about.
But with that being said, the Chiefs, it's not as though they were, you know, they were the Cinderella story that came from nowhere and this was their one shot. I guess when I saw the Kansas City fans, some of them last night, it was a different kind of feeling. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying?
Because, I think because they
still got
history in front.
Well, they still got Reed. They still got
history in front of them.
Yeah.
Because it would have been the first time a team, you know, in the modern age of pro football would have won three Super Bowls. Lombardi and the Packers won an NFL championship and then Super Bowls one and two. But they didn't win three straight. And, you know, for you were that close. You had a 15-2 season. You didn't get that by luck. Man, I saw a couple people write by luck. What, you don't win 15 games in a 17-game season by luck. But yesterday, the Eagles were the better team, and you got to give it to them. And you may never cross that way again to have that opportunity to win three in a row. It may never happen again with that team.
Did Kansas City appear a little flat to you?
Well, they were flat. They got flattened.
Flat 10.
I guess.
Yeah.
By the Eagles. I just think that they kind of got overwhelmed early. And you could almost kind of feel the tsunami hit you. That once the Eagles, you saw it early, what you saw from the first part of the game, it lasted literally until midway into the fourth quarter. That they could not get away from the heavy pressure, the Eagles. And I give Kellen Moore and company a lot of credit. Man, they kept pedal to the metal. You know, they had a lead, and they just kept hitting it because they wanted no comeback. And even in the fourth quarter, throwing that football deep downfield to get a late touchdown, you know, they knew they didn't want to give Mahomes any shot yesterday for any type of comeback. But, man, it was a dominating performance by the Eagles on both sides of the football.
Only thing I kept thinking of was you always have a plan until you get punched in the mouth, right?
Hit.
Then all of a sudden, not so much. All right, more when we come back, Mike Dettelier, 6:30, time for WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. Mike, when it comes to how likely either the Chiefs, before we get to the Saints, or the Eagles, because, you know, nobody ever stays the same, are going to be close to what they look like this year. Thoughts?
I think that, you know, when you have the quarterback position right, you're more than halfway there. And with the Eagles, it's going to be about trying to keep as many of those core guys, offensive, defensive line in place. I do think the AFC is a much more competitive situation because of the quarterback issue there. Where, man, you know, you got Josh Allen out in Buffalo, and you got Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. If Joe Burrow can have any semblance of a defense out in Cincinnati. But, man, it's tough. People don't realize it. Oh, we should have won 4 or 5 Super Bowls. Oh, okay, you didn't. It's difficult to win a Super Bowl title. Really difficult. And a lot of people, the dislike for the Chiefs has nothing to do with official calls or referees. A lot of people really can't admit to themselves that there's a team or players better than what they pull for. You're not saying that if you're in Kansas City, okay? And I think that there is that reality check that it's difficult to come back and to win another one. And where I know they probably favorites, because they'll post it today. If you go to the Slipper, they'll have it. You can bet on who get to the Super Bowl for next year already. That those two teams will be at the top of the list. But it's going to be hard, Tommy. It's going to be hard to come back and get back to that big game. But they do have elements there in place. More so Eagles than Chiefs. Because of, I just think their offensive and defensive lines is so good. And it got a lot of young players on both sides of the football for Philly.
What a startling statistic to me was when you looked at the offensive line of the Eagles compared to the offensive line in a first Super Bowl. 6'3", 245 was the average in a first Super Bowl. The Eagles' offensive line, the average, 6'6", 3 what, 36? Or 36, 336, I think it was.
Yeah, and, man, you know, their offensive line coach, he's one of the best in the business. He does a great job. I think of Mekhi Becton. Mekhi was an overweight, underachiever, listed as a major bust, Mekhi Becton with the Jets. They cut him loose. He ends up being a starter and a good starter for the Eagles. Coaching does matter, and fit does matter. And Mekhi fit really well into that. But, man, Eagles offensive line, absolutely enormous. And their defensive line, you know, one of the things Vic told them early on, hey, you're going to be playing a lot more plays, so you better lose some weight. And he got Jalen Carter and Davis and Milt Williams, who's I scouted him. He was at Louisiana Tech. He's from Crowley High School in Texas. You know, a lightly recruited guy goes to Tech, had a great game. Josh Sweat. What they did, man, their defensive front is really, really good. And so that's why, yeah, the size and the speed of the game too, Tommy, none of those guys are slow.
Nope.
It's amazing how big these guys are today
and
from
fast.
Back when Super Bowl I was played. But it's really amazing the athleticism these guys have today.
Remember back in the day, the thing was, with Elway, the Denver offensive line was a little smaller and they were quicker. Well, now they're as quick as that Denver offensive line was, but they're bigger.
That's the one thing, because this 40 years for me in the scouting business, that you see the biggest difference. Those guys in the 60s, they could play in today's game. They would have to make a little adjustment from a size standpoint. But they could still play. But when I first started, to have these type size guys with that much speed and quickness, you didn't see it. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, you saw one like that. You saw a player like that. Now it's regular that you see with the training and, you know, I guess the genetics of this sport, so many more bigger, faster players than ever before in your lifetime. And yet there are people, if you met him on the street, you would say, that guy plays football, pro football. Mm-hmm. He's not very big. So, but the linemen, that's been the biggest change. The size and the athleticism from when I first started, it's amazingly different.
I know, seeing some of those guys on Media Row last week, Mike, some of them even bigger than me.
Just a tad.
Yeah,
huh?
even bigger than me. All right, let's come back, talk about the Saints and coaches and so forth. And the news yesterday about Aaron Rodgers, somebody texted about the Saints having interest in Aaron Rodgers. I want nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what kind of drugs they're on, but we'll talk about it when we come back. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. Mike, when it comes to how likely either the Chiefs, before we get to the Saints, or the Eagles, because, you know, nobody ever stays the same, are going to be close to what they look like this year, thoughts?
I think that, you know, when you have the quarterback position right, you're more than halfway there. And with the Eagles, it's going to be about trying to keep as many of those core guys, offensive, defensive line, in place. I do think the AFC is a much more competitive situation because of the quarterback issue there. Where, man, you know, you got Josh Allen out in Buffalo, and you got Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. If Joe Burrow can have any semblance of a defense out in Cincinnati. But, man, it's tough. People don't realize it. Oh, we should have won 4 or 5 Super Bowls. Oh, okay, you didn't. It's difficult to win a Super Bowl title. Really difficult. And a lot of people, the dislike for the Chiefs has nothing to do with official calls or referees. A lot of people really can't admit to themselves that there's a team or players better than what they pull for. You're not saying that if you're in Kansas City, okay? And I think that there is that reality check that it's difficult to come back and to win another one. And where I know they probably favorites, because they'll post it today. If you go to the Slipper, they'll have it. You can bet on who get to the Super Bowl for next year already. That those two teams will be at the top of the list. But it's going to be hard, Tommy. It's going to be hard to come back and get back to that big game. But they do have elements there in place. More so Eagles than Chiefs. Because of, I just think their offensive and defensive lines is so good, and got a lot of young players on both sides of the football for Philly.
What a startling statistic to me was when you looked at the offensive line of the Eagles compared to the offensive line in a first Super Bowl. 6'3", 245 was the average in a first Super Bowl. The Eagles' offensive line, the average, 6'6", 3 what, 36 or 36, 336, I think it was.
Yeah, and, man, you know, their offensive line coach, he's one of the best in the business. He does a great job. I think of Mekhi Becton. Mekhi was an overweight, underachiever, listed as a major bust, Mekhi Becton, with the Jets. They cut him loose. He ends up being a starter and a good starter for the Eagles. Coaching does matter, and fit does matter. And Mekhi fit really well into that. But, man, Eagles' offensive line, absolutely enormous. And their defensive line, you know, one of the things Vic told them early on, hey, you're going to be playing a lot more plays, so you better lose some weight. And he got Jalen Carter and Davis and Milton Williams, who's I scouted him. He was at Louisiana Tech. He's from Crowley High School in Texas. You know, a lightly recruited guy goes to Tech, had a great game. Josh Sweat, what they did. Man, their defensive front is really, really good. And so that's why, yeah, the size and the speed of the game too, Tommy, none of those guys are slow.
Nope.
It's amazing how big these guys are today from back when Super Bowl I was played. But it's really amazing the athleticism these guys have today.
Remember back in the day, the thing was with Elway, the Denver offensive line was a little smaller and they were quicker. Well, now they're as quick as that Denver offensive line was, but they're bigger.
That's the one thing, because this 40 years for me in the scouting business, that you see the biggest difference. Those guys in the 60s, they could play in today's game. They would have to make a little adjustment from a size standpoint, but they could still play. But when I first started, to have these type size guys with that much speed and quickness, you didn't see it. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, you saw one like that. You saw a player like that. Now, it's regular that you see with the training and, you know, I guess the genetics of this sport, so many more bigger, faster players than ever before in your lifetime. And yet, there are people, if you met him on the street, you would say, that guy plays football, pro football. Mm-hmm. He's not very big. So, but the linemen, that's been the biggest change. The size and the athleticism from when I first started, it's amazingly different.
I know, seeing some of those guys on Media Row last week, Mike, some of them even bigger than me.
Just a tad.
Yeah, even bigger than me. All right, let's come back, talk about the Saints and coaches and so forth. And the news yesterday about Aaron Rodgers, somebody texted about the Saints having interest in Aaron Rodgers. I want nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what kind of drugs they're on, but we'll talk about it when we come back. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 656, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Mike Dettillier. Thanks for all your help during the season, Mike. I know you do double duty on Monday talking to us, and you go second guess at the Silver Slipper Casino, as you will be this afternoon. Mike, did you watch any of the commercials yesterday?
Very few.
Did you understand?
I will be honest, very few.
Did you understand who half the people were that were on them? Between the diffusion of media with so many different outlets and who's on streaming and who's this and who's that, I didn't know who the hell half these people were.
I agree with you, and it's like that. It was like that last week on Radio Row. Okay, you walk in, and you know somebody will say, "Hey, can you come do an interview?" Okay, like what outlet? And they'll tell you, "Okay, I'd never heard of a few of them." You know, so you know, I will be a nice guy about it. I'm gonna go do the interview, but it was. I guess it was sort of like that with the commercials too.
My YouTube channel, somebody came up to me at Radio Row and gave me a, I got it right here, as a matter of fact, as we begin to talk about the Saints, the Kelly Williams Show. Tune in, turn on, and you're happy, and it's some kind of YouTube thing or something. And I don't know, back in the day, all these people didn't get media credentials. Now, all of a sudden, if you got
no, and today, now they do it. Yeah. You know, it's another outlet for them to give opinions and interviews and stuff like that. And that's fantastic. That's great. Because we live in that world now where, man, that cell phone and being on YouTube and everything else, it is a form of our entertainment today.
What outlet are you with? Well, I got a cell phone. Okay, there you go.
So I have a show.
So let's talk about if Kellen Moore gets a job, any changes in personnel or that anything from his history that you would predict for the Saints or not really?
I'm interested in what he does defensively, because I think from the offensive standpoint, he sort of knows who his people are going to be if he can land them. But defensively, that's not his baby. He's going to have to trust somebody else to run his defense. That to me is always the big key. When you hire either an offensive or defensive coach, what they do on the other side of the football, because of the fact that, you know, you might be the head coach, but your expertise is only on one side. I think you're going to see massive changes certainly, and the coaching staff, he's going to have his, you know, choice of assistant coaches who he wants to go after. But they're going to have also a roster turnover all offseason. Tommy, it ain't going to be just 8 or 10 guys. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a massive undertaking here of churning over this roster because they're in big need of help across the board, every position.
Thank you, Mike Dettelier, for a great season, as always. And before you know it, the draft will be here. We'll be talking to you. Free agency and hiring of the new Saints coach. Who knows? Thank you, sir, Mike Dettelier. We'll take a break. We come back. We will talk about the Super Bowl commercials with Tim Calkins, clinical professor of marketing at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. We do this every year. We'll get a recap when we return on WWL. 7:16, got some fog out there. Be careful. And kind of like misty conditions, I guess. Weather hasn't been nice, really. We got some rain yesterday in Belchase, right, as the president arrived. Highs of 70 today, 77 tomorrow, and really through Thursday, then it's going to be a rainy week. It'll be a rainy, yucky week, let's put it that way, and then it cools off by Sunday. Tim Calkins joins us, clinical professor of marketing at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Kickstart your new year with a rewarding career at the HK Group. HK is the leader in heavy construction and contractor site materials with over 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. HK offers a wide range of opportunities, including heavy equipment operators, CDL drivers, mechanics, site supervisors, engineers, and project managers. 100% paid benefits designed to promote healthy living, financial stability, and career growth. The HK Group does not discriminate. Apply today at hkgroup.com. It's your future opportunity.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We look forward to this every year. Kellogg's, well, you tell me what y'all do. Tim, good morning, first of all, to you, and I hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl.
Well, good morning. We certainly enjoyed the advertising this year, for sure.
Tell me what it is that you all do every year.
Yeah, so every year we get together a panel of our MBA students. This is at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. This year we had 73 of our MBA students gathered together. And during the Super Bowl, we evaluate all the advertising. We're looking for business impact. So, you know, a lot of people look at, was it funny and entertaining? We're trying to think about, is it going to build the business? Is it going to build the brand? And then we come up with our rankings of who did the best job and who sort of missed the mark this year. And it's always really interesting to look at what companies run and how well it goes.
Because somebody texted in and said, what's strange about Super Bowl's commercials is when I can't figure out what they're trying to sell. That's not good, is it?
Well, no, but that's one of the challenges. These these companies are working so hard to get your attention that you, they sometimes miss the basic question of what is this thing and why should somebody buy it? And but that's the challenge, because you got to stand out on the game and then at the same time deliver that message if it's really going to work.
What about demographics and who watches the Super Bowl and how do advertisers determine who it is they're trying to reach?
Well, the Super Bowl is unique because it's such a big audience and it's so diverse because, you know, the you have usually well over 100 million people watching the Super Bowl, which is a huge chunk of the U.S. population. So you can't really do targeted advertising on the Super Bowl, or that's super inefficient. And it's a problem, actually, in lots of ways. So the challenge is you have to come up with creative that's going to be broadly appealing and it's going to reach this mass audience and work with really everybody, because that's who's watching.
So going to Don Draper and Mad Men, you're sitting around the boardroom and you're pitching ideas. The idea that you pitch for a network spot in the Super Bowl is going to be different than an idea you would pitch for a specific program. Accurate?
It's going to be very different just because the competitive set is different, but also the financial investment. Mm-hmm. You know, spots were going up to, you know, for upwards of $8 million for 30 seconds this year. And that's wildly more expensive than other advertising. So it's a very different process developing a Super Bowl ad, both in terms of the potential, but also in terms of the risk. If you miss the mark, you can do a lot of damage with your Super Bowl ad.
You know what meant what left the most lasting impression on me, Professor? And I don't know what that says about me, but the commercial with Harrison Ford, and I'm not quite, I guess it was for a Jeep, but the only thing I kept thinking was, man, I'd like to live in that cabin, which was not the point of the commercial at all. And then it was kind of cute the way he ended it by saying, oh, and my name is Ford, because he was endorsing a Jeep. But what did your results show? Who did not do so well? And we'll start from the bottom and work our way up. Who kind of missed the market?
Yeah, so spots that missed the mark this year, there were a handful, we thought. One was the Coffee Mate spot. I think you might remember that one. It featured a very large tongue. And
yeah.
And the problem there is what we call negative amplification. Like, what do you remember? And what people are really going to remember from that ad is this rather unattractive tongue. And that sort of tanked that spot because that was the dominant creative things. That was one that missed. Another spot that a lot of people were interested in seeing, but didn't do well, at least with our panel, was the spot for ChatGPT.
Which one was that?
And well, that featured a lot of dots morphing into different shapes. And you know, apparently they've never done a lot of advertising at ChatGPT at OpenAI. And or maybe this was created by ChatGPT. Who knows? But in any event, it's pretty clear that it's their first time, because that spot was confusing. That was one of those spots you look at and you just wonder, what are we advertising here? And for the panel, they really were lost by that spot. And like, what's the benefit? What are we trying to communicate? And so while a lot of people were interested to see what ChatGPT was going to run, that one really fell short and fell flat.
That cowboy head one was kind of weird, too. What was all that about?
That was at the bottom of the list as well. So that Tubi, that was Tubi.
Okay.
And they actually ran three spots on the game last night. So they ran, I think, more than anyone, but perhaps unfortunately so, because a lot of it featured that very disturbing character with that cowboy head. Gross. And that's another one where it's just so unappealing that it overwhelms whatever message you're getting across. What really sticks with you? You know, this is the question of amplification. What's going to stick with you? And in that spot, what sticks with you is that really disturbing character, which is not going to drive a lot of sales and build that brand.
You know what else? And we'll pick it up when we come back, Professor. What I found personally distracting, sometimes instead of paying attention to the commercial, I was wondering, okay, is this a celebrity that I should recognize or not? Because with the diffusion of media, everybody's got streaming this, that program, the other thing. I don't know who's the celebrity and who isn't these days. We'll talk more when we come back. Tim Calkins, clinical professor of marketing at the prestigious Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, 722 Traffic Now, WWL. Talking to Tim Calkins, clinical professor of marketing at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, about Super Bowl commercials that hit the mark and didn't. Professor, one thing that just kills me about this cowboy hat head thing is that you spent $24 million on a guy with a head shaped like a cowboy hat? Now I'm going to have to kill everybody. Really? That's crazy, isn't it?
That is astonishing. You do wonder how that happened. I mean, it's certainly distinctive, and that's something these advertisers have to do. But you would think they would have picked up something in the testing they did.
To kill
that's
everybody,
really
that's,
unappealing.
That's Bill Murray from Scrooged. Just to be honest, I don't want to think anybody think I'm threatening anybody. The Lay's commercial, I don't get it. She planted a potato and got a potato back, but she got a better potato? Is that it?
It seems a low return on investment, but people like that spot. They thought it was this cute story, and that was one that didn't.
A low return on investment. Yes, it was a lot of effort because I was confused. She just dug up a potato, which is what she buried, right? But a better potato, supposedly?
I guess a better that part sort of eluded me there. But what's interesting is that spot, for me, did surprisingly well with our panel. I think it was such an engaging story, and she was really cute. And you feel good about Lay's by the end of this thing, and the family farms comes across. And that's a reason to feel good about Lay's, and I think that's what worked for them.
What is the one that knocked it out of the park that won it all?
So with our panel, very surprising, the spot from Novartis for breast cancer awareness. So you'll remember that spot. That was all about breasts.
Oh, yeah.
And it was celebrating breasts.
Got my attention.
And, it did, and that was the whole point. And they're saying, boy, you really should pay more attention to your breasts and get those things screened. And so surprising to see a pharmaceutical company at the top of the list. That's the first time we've been doing this 21 years now. It's the first time a pharmaceutical company has pulled that off. But it was a really catchy spot. They took a risk. They hit that fine line between being too edgy and not distinctive enough. And it really communicated a message and encouraged people to go get screened. So that was sort of a really surprising out of the park.
And spot. It was well done because Wanda Sykes wrapped it up perfectly. Professor, pleasure as always. Next year we're going to have you on for an hour to talk about this because there's never enough time. Thank you, sir. Tim Calkins.
Always fun to do. Thank you.
You bet. Clinical professor of marketing at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Monday morning markets with Mark. Tariffs being shot back and forth right now. Time for WWL First News. You know, I hesitate to say this, but on his way back last night, President Trump stopped at my home in Belche since he was passing by, and it was kind of like, how can I describe it? If you've ever seen the movie Caddyshack, it was kind of like when Chevy Chase visits Bill Murray, the groundskeeper at his shed. It was kind of like that kind of thing. Mark Rosa joins us now, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. How you doing, Mark?
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
It was just like that. You know, it was
quite a visit.
Showing him around, you know, this kind of thing. And that's where I keep the riding lawnmower. That's where I keep the riding lawnmower. And he was very, very interested to see that.
Did he want to take a ride on it?
No. Matter of fact, I engaged in riding lawnmower rodeo yesterday inadvertently. And I'm going to tell a story later, and I'll tease it. I discovered how arch barriers work in the form of patio chairs, and I'll just leave it at that, okay?
Okay. I'll wait to hear the details.
That. All right, let's talk
That's
about
it.
Tariffs. What's going on? I see your tariff, and I'll raise you a tariff. Oh, yeah? I'll raise you a tariff. Is that what's going on?
Tom, you know, we had, and I'll segue into that, but, you know, we had a really good, we were talking Friday. Mm-hmm. Good economic week last week, a lot of data coming out. You know, sometimes it's very sparse, and then other times you're just inundated with things. And Friday, we were talking about the Dow approaching the all-time high again at 44,900. The high is right over 45,000. So that's fantastic. That's great news. Talk about 401ks. People would like what their balances are doing. It eclipsed right not long after the election in November. Then it retreated about 3,000 points, and now it's back at it when some of the things have calmed down. That was all when the Fed was – they didn't know what they were going to do, and they were saying as much. That caused the market to pull back a bit. But we had the two things that determine stock prices, interest rates and corporate earnings. So the banks – we're in earnings season right now. Ever since the first week of the year, the big banks came out good – earnings, better than analyst expectations. I sent those stocks up. Then you had a lot of the tech companies out. They had a couple that disappointed a little bit, but mostly better than expected, better earnings than the expectations. That sent those stocks up a bit. And then we had 19 of 21 industrial companies that delivered earnings per share wins, so above analyst expectations. That was last week. Then you had this 9 out of 12, 75% consumer discretionary stocks that delivered earnings per share wins. Now, that's particularly important. A consumer discretionary is defined as stocks of companies that things that we want, not that we need. So if people are spending and those earnings are going up, that proves that, you know, the economy is reasonably healthy. People are largely working. The unemployment rate should be low. I'll get to that in a second. And they're spending money on luxury items. They're spending money on cruises, on pricey handbags, whatever it is. Those are 75% of those stocks delivered earnings per share wins. So this week we have McDonald's coming out, Coca-Cola, Shopify, Cisco, CME Group, Applied Materials, bunch of companies still reporting earnings. So this is going to carry at least probably to the end of the month when most of them will have reported. Job reports comes out Friday, and 169,000 jobs are estimated. 143 was the actual number. So that's slightly less than expectations. But the previous number was 256,000. That was in December. Fantastic number. I remember it was well beyond expectations. And people were, whoa, you know, that was a lot of jobs that were unexpected, but that's good for the economy. But all around this periphery, you see where I'm going with this, is the worries about inflation and how many people are going back to work and they're going to spend their money. Is that going to drive up prices? You know, something that's been followed, there's one economist that follows what the Labor Department does, and it was about, I want to say it was in the summer when you and I were talking about, you know, a certain number of jobs came in. They miscounted the jobs by like 250,000 people, and those had to be revised up. What doesn't get a lot of press, after the actual number for the month comes out, the Labor Department has a chance on two subsequent months to revise the numbers up. They're still working on it. They release a number, and then they can revise them. But that doesn't get the headline. The headline is how many jobs were reported that the economy increased by. This is 143,000. So in the December and November payrolls, both of those were decent numbers already. And the Labor Department came out and said, you know, we miscounted by 100,000 jobs. So you got to add those into the already strong numbers in November and December. The 143 that was reported for January, well, that's not a big number. A number that starts with a 3, that would be a big number. But between all these revisions, it drove the unemployment rate even lower. It was 4.2 a couple of months ago, then 4.1 with the jobs that came out late last year, and now it's 4.0. So we're basically at a point of full employment. The economists would argue, right, it used to be when you and I were in school, it used to be about 5%, but that number is able to go lower, 4%, saying you're always going to have somebody that's unemployed. But when the number gets as low as it gets, and especially down into the 3s would be for sure, that then inflation starts to worry. And we bring back conversations about some esoteric graph called the Phillips curve, which was an economic theory that said the lower that the unemployment rate goes, the higher that the level of inflation could go. It's not absolute. It's not perfect. We've had times in economic history where that was challenged a bit, but it kind of makes sense. And the data have supported it more times than not. And now we're at this full employment. And could it be driven even lower? Well, then here comes the inflation conversation. So the Fed comes out last week saying, well, you know, we kind of on a wait and see. We might be reducing the number of cuts this year from 2 down to 1. That stuff has largely been debunked late last year. It's like with the economy doing what it's doing, I don't think they're going to lower rates at all. So the Fed meets in 37 days. There's a 91% chance there's no rate increases at this next meeting. But I went to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange's FedWatch calendar, and I do this about once a month. I go through all of the meetings that are expected throughout the year, all the way to December, and there's not a single reading that over 50% of the analysts are feeling that we should have a rate change. So that's basically, we might need to just, you know, Powell just might as well say, look, we can't lower rates in the face of full employment. That's going to create its own concerns about inflation. And inflation news is coming out this week for the CPI and the PPI, and they're both expected to be at 0.3%. So what is that? That's 3.6% for the year, and that's well above the 2% target. Now we could talk about the tariff. So you add that on to all the news that's happened, and the Dow promptly was down between Friday and this morning. It's down 400 because everybody's worried that inflation will be higher than what the Fed can stand. And you know what's coming. They're going to start raising rates potentially. So that's the fear. Okay, you talk.
Here's what confuses me. All of these earnings reports are good, right?
The earnings reports are good, that the companies are doing decently. And, you know, sometimes wages increased 6% month-over-month basis. It's 6% for the year. And so, you know, wages, and every time we report this, it seems like wages will go up by varying amounts, but it's 0.3% here or 0.5% there for a monthly increase. So wages have not consumed all of the increases in prices, but it's better than them being stagnant. So that, too, is creating its own, at least the worries about what inflation can do, because people are making more money, and what do they do with it? They spend it fairly quickly. So there's it's encouraging when all the earnings are up, just as you mentioned, and the companies are doing better. So the stock market should be doing better. It's a collection of those companies. And what would be the fly in the ointment, because we remain on Fed watch, is if they tip borrowing rates up, that's what Wall Street, I think, fears most.
Man, I'm trying to get a handle on when it's good. Is it good? When it's bad, is it bad? What's good is bad. Bad is good. Bad is now bad. I don't know, Mark. Do you get it?
I think from a tariff standpoint, that's very protectionist. You know, he's protecting companies here by raising the prices on goods coming over here. And I see what he's saying. I was looking at some things on the inflation front or the tariff front over the weekend. And, you know, I'll give you one, for instance, that one of his staffers was complaining about. We sell cars overseas, and they'll increase the price by 20%. It's called that value-added tax, which consumes Europe. Everybody over in Europe has a value-added tax. They installed it back in the 60s. We're going to add, it's like a national sales tax. So that means that the people over there can buy fewer American cars, but when the BMWs come over here, mm-hmm. we add 2%, 2.5%. So Trump is saying, you know, you're beating us up. We don't have a chance to sell a Chevy over in Europe, but you're all too eager to send the German products, using them as an example, anything mm-hmm. over in Europe, coming over here, and people like their cars. I mean, they're built well and so on, but it's just not, that's why there are these trade deficits that he wants to address. I get it. But could it cause trouble in the meantime? Well, yeah, raising prices on things is not good. But he wants to. I think he's shaken up the countries that he's aimed this tariff at most. It would be the Mexicos and the Canadas. And you and I were talking about that. It showed that no sooner he puts those in, and they sit up straight. It's like let's rethink this. And that's what he wants. He wants them to come to the bargaining table and to do something about these trade deficits.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Yes,
7:55, 5 till 8. All I know is the over hit yesterday on the game, so I'm a happy camper. 7:55 now, 5 till 8, traffic WWL. 8:16 now on this Monday morning, February 10th, the Monday after TSA, suggesting you get to the airport 4 hours early if you have a flight, because naturally it is the biggest event in the world. Well, it was yesterday, and now people are trying to get home from it. Mark Romig joins us now, senior advisor for New Orleans and Company. Mark, congratulations to you and really the city, and I don't know who to congratulate, because I couldn't have been more proud watching the coverage yesterday. And all week long, media row, the way the city looked, the pregame coverage on Fox. Thoughts?
Thank you, Tommy. It is a wonderful Monday morning in New Orleans, and the big thanks goes to maybe probably 2,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 volunteers that stepped up to the plate to make this happen.
Yeah, talk about them, if you will, because, and I don't know if you're specifically talking about these volunteers, but as we were going back to work on Thursday, I think it was, I saw them deployed in their teal T-shirts with the beads. Talk about who that was.
Yeah, so early in the process, we solicited volunteers from around the community, around the region, to be part of the hospitality greetings and assistance and answering questions. And they were all over town this past week, particularly yesterday. They were lined all along Poydras Street and where we had a number of floats lined up, and they were giving out beads and just welcoming people and thanking them for being in New Orleans and hoping that they come back, because certainly this is an opportunity for us to show off the best of this community and this region, and I think we accomplished that. I'm now over at the handoff press conference. We are handing the ball over to the San Francisco Bay Area. They will host next year Super Bowl 60, and everyone is in great spirits. The commissioner said that the San Francisco Bay Area folks are a little nervous after seeing what we were able to do here. But, you know, every year, the next Super Bowl raises the bar from the previous one. So I'm sure they'll do a great job. But we are very pleased with what has happened. The game was decidedly in favor of the Eagles, but the pageantry was there, and the Superdome never looked better. The Caesar Superdome really shined on national broadcast.
I don't know really what part of it looked better, the downtown lighting, the Crescent City connection, all in all. It just, I mean, you guys had to be very happy with what the nation saw, huh?
Yeah, we are. And I think the opening segment on Fox with the
Lady
solemn
Gaga.
Memorial to, yeah, the solemn memorial to the tragedy on Bourbon Street, and the feel that everyone was lifting us up. And that was what the commissioner just mentioned, that it was important for us to never forget that, but also to rally and thank the first responders and say that we move forward, we move on, and we will not bow down. So it just all came together. And, of course, the pregame, the great entertainment that was provided by Louisiana artists, it just really was the best that I've ever seen. So we're planning, you know, for future Super Bowls, hopefully here. I think everyone seems to be pleased with how the hotels, the restaurants, the attractions, our visitors, the experience that they had, and it's all coming together so that it once again shows why we are built to host.
To go back to the moving video, that had to take a lot of effort to get something like that done in the middle of the night and get all the principals involved together on Bourbon Street, huh?
Yeah, it was done in a very secretive way because they did not want to spoil that wonderful surprise of what that would look like on national television. But it was a cast of hundreds. Of course, you had the police chief, you had the commissioner, you had Mrs. Benson, you had all of the major players together. Yeah, and of course, Lady Gaga walking up to her and her singing the song that really raised everybody's hopes and spirits and touched everybody. There were a lot of tears in the dome last night as people were watching that.
And it brought not just about New Orleans, but about Los Angeles, and even it was talked about the other things in the country that would bring us all together. Let me take a quick break, Mark, and we'll pick it up when we come back. Mark Romig, senior advisor for New Orleans and Company. He's at the handoff ceremony, handing the ball off, and we spoke to the people from the Bay Area Committee last week when we were on Radio Row, and we'll talk about future Super Bowls and more when we come back. 820 Traffic, WWL. 8:24 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to a busy Mark Romig, senior advisor for New Orleans and Company. So I heard on our news earlier, Walt Leger talking about, and I hadn't even realized this before with the Super Bowl, and when you look at Super Bowl history, how they used to be in January, now it's the second week of February, how we want to have Super Bowls, but that can sometimes conflict with Mardi Gras because we also want to have that as well, right?
Yeah, there's a very careful coordination of schedules, particularly here in New Orleans in the months of January and February. We look at the Mardi Gras dates. Obviously, we want a little disruption of that iconic celebration. And then we also look for further out for any conventions that have already booked into the city. We certainly don't want to disrupt that. And so we weigh all that, and then we look at what years make sense for us to then we approach the NFL to say we are available. And that kind of conversation, those sorts of discussions go on a regular basis. So I'm sure once all the dust settles, and we know we've got three Super Bowls planned out right now. You've got San Francisco, then Los Angeles, then Atlanta. And then the NFL will be looking to place the game at another venue, another city, and hopefully we'll be in the hunt for that. But a lot goes into the discussions as to availability of space and what's already on the books. But once again, you know, we're ready. We'd love to do our 12th one, and that message has been made very clear to everybody today.
So when it comes to feedback from the NFL, I can't imagine anything that they would have any issue with at all, huh? Do they?
Yeah, I mean, speaking to the commissioner this morning, his comments at this opening press conference to hand the ball over to San Francisco Bay Area, it's been nothing but glowing praise from the game and go backwards all the way through the week, opening night last Monday at Caesars Superdome, to the parade itself on Saturday, to all of the elements around the NFL honors at the Sanger on Thursday night, just the activity that occurred throughout the week. And again, Brian McCarthy, their head of public relations, even mentioned the how great compactness the city brings to an event like this, where it took him no more than 16 minutes to walk from his hotel to any major event in the city during the week. So we've got, you know, got people pulling for us. And I think, you know, you've got to be obviously cognizant of other cities that would like to have this wonderful event. There are going to be new stadiums coming online, and those are always given consideration. But once again, New Orleans has proven this to the world. And speaking of the world, Tommy, we had 20 nations represented in the media center this week. And we've had the most of any Super Bowl with the number of media that came to us, something like 6,400 members of the media from around the world.
One other thing I wanted to talk about was convention business, Mark, and that's while Super Bowls are big and get the attention of the world, that convention business is extremely important. And what are some of the big things on the book? And Walt Leger telling me that you guys got things, or maybe you told me, I don't know, it was a long week, things booked in the 2040 already?
Yeah, I mean, conventions are the lifeblood of our visitor activity, because when a convention comes in, it's just not someone staying in a hotel and perhaps going to eat at a couple of restaurants and going to a museum or two. These events bring in production of events. There are special receptions that happen, build-outs of the convention center. And a lot of this is business expense. So a visitor comes in, they'll spend usually almost twice as much as a regular visitor, a convention delegate. And, you know, these are anything from a corporate board retreat all the way to a 25,000 member National Automobile Dealers Association, which takes the entire convention center. So very important to the lifeblood of our economy. The convention sales team led by Stephanie Turner is out around the nation talking with meeting planners, talking with association groups, and have things booked out into early 2040s.
So looking back, and we only have a minute left here, is there anything the city can do better? I don't know what they could do, honestly.
Well, you know, we have a convention center hotel that recently was announced. The Omni will be developing and building another hotel across from the convention center, which is very important to have an anchor property attached to the convention center, much like what the Hilton plays at the Downriver side and all the other big hotels like the Sheraton and Marriott and the Hyatt. So that's coming online, and that's going to help us compete even more. And, of course, all the retail and upgrades to Upriver side of the convention center, that will help, again, build more opportunities and more venue space for events like this to use. So I think we're planning well for the future, and we feel very, very good about the next several years.
I think everybody involved knocked it out of the park. Well, except the Chiefs. Congratulations, Mark.
Thank you, Tommy. Thanks for being with us last week.
Thank you, sir. It was our pleasure. Mark Romig, Senior Advisor for New Orleans & Company. We're going to take a break. Come back, talk with Ted Rossman, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst, about financial infidelity. What is that? We'll find out when we come back. WWL. 846, 14 till 9. We're talking to Ted Rossman, our friend, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst, about 40% of Americans that are in a relationship have committed financial infidelity. How you doing there, Ted?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Did you watch a game yesterday or not?
I did, yeah. Big win for the Eagles, huh?
Tell me how the city came off to you, City of New Orleans. I'm just curious about an outsider's view of the way the City of New Orleans was presented, et cetera, your impressions?
It seems like New Orleans has been a great host for a lot of these events over the years, and seems like everybody had a good time, especially those wearing green, right?
Yeah, well, or bet the over, since we're talking finances, because, you know, people don't realize that game, you know, it was a blowout and it wasn't very exciting unless you had a financial stake in the over. Then it was a nail biter up until the very end. And you're talking to a guy who's still sick to his stomach. And I won. Let's talk about 40% of U.S. adults that in live-in relationships have committed financial infidelity. Ted Rossman, tell me about that.
Yeah, we're talking about things like secret spending, secret debt, secret credit cards, secret bank accounts. 4 in 10 Americans who are married or otherwise living with a romantic partner have either done this in the past or they're still doing it currently against that person. That's a lot of people keeping a lot of secrets. The fix here really needs to be communication. We ought to be better about talking about money. I know sometimes it's tricky and we're ashamed of things in our past, but it's better to come clean sooner rather than later. The secret can take on a life of its own and really undermine trust.
You know, it's interesting when you said against the other that you would use the word against. I caught that. And let's go back to, are we separating or delineating live-in relationships from marriages here or not?
We're combining both of them. So, you know, we're not talking about you've just been on a couple dates. I mean, we're talking at least a couple that's living together, perhaps married, but definitely living together.
Because here's what I don't know, Ted, if you've ever been divorced or not, but when you get served those papers, you realize, and I tell younger people this that are thinking about getting married, that, okay, I understand the rainbows and the unicorns and the puppies and the heartbeats and all that stuff, but you got to understand that what you're doing here is you're signing a civil contract and you're forming a partnership with joint assets is what you're doing here, right? So I don't know if the average person realizes that or not, but you wouldn't run a partnership when it comes to a marriage, and I guess we're going bordering on some legal territory here, but it would make no sense to be in a business partnership with somebody and keep financial secrets from them. And you almost have to look at it that way, do you not?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I know sometimes people want independence and they think that, well, I work hard for my money and I should be able to do what I want. And that's some of why people squirrel money away or they spend in secret. A lot of people now are going with this whole yours, mine, and ours thing, which can actually be some of the solution if you're upfront about it. I don't like the secrets, but if you and your spouse agree, let's say that you each get a certain dollar amount or a certain percentage of every paycheck that's yours and yours alone, that can actually be a healthy approach where, you know, I don't know, maybe you get $100 a paycheck. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less. And you can spend that on hobbies or nights out with friends, video games, shoes, whatever it is. Gifts, and then the other person's not looking over your shoulder. Yours, mine, and ours can actually be a viable way to approach money within a relationship if you agree upon the framework.
What you're talking about, though, to me, goes back to budgeting, right? That's where it all starts?
It does. And you know, to a lot of people, budget is a dirty word, and it's just a way to say no to everything, right? You can't have any fun. That's why a lot of people don't do it. I would try to frame it more positively. And back to that point about for versus against, you want to get pulling in the same direction. So it doesn't really work if everybody's doing their own thing. But if you can really collaborate on, okay, what do we want to achieve in the next few years? Do we want to buy a house? Do we want to get out of debt? Do we want to retire early or help the kids with college costs or, you know, whatever your financial goals are? I would urge people to really talk about this and frame things in that more positive construct. What are we working towards? How are we going to pull there together? Not that you have to agree upon everything. I mean, everybody has their own hobbies and wishes, and you know, you should carve out some fun money for those things. But make sure the big stuff is covered, too. And that's why it's important to have these money conversations or money dates with your spouse. Talk about what bills are coming up, but also talk about those financial goals and values and really frame things around what are you working towards.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Ted Rossman, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst. I'll ask you on the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870, have you ever committed financial infidelity, kept financial secrets from your significant other if you're married or in a live-in relationship? And I'm not going to out you anything. I won't give you a phone number or anything. I'm just curious at 504-260-1870. 1870, and I don't know how, you know, a house divided against itself financially can stand. I don't think it's a good idea at all, and we'll drill down on that. And then the next hour I should bring up, we're going to talk to Elizabeth Overstreet, a relationship expert and love strategist, about the emotional part of this, but we're addressing the financial part of it with Ted Rossman, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst. And I will add, as I ask for your texts here, as I mentioned, the over, and I'm a single guy, so I can do whatever I want. But as I mentioned, betting, do you bet football and does your or anything? And does your significant other know about that or not? 852, 8 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 857, 858, call it. We're talking to Ted Rossman, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst. Somebody's texted and said they're getting divorced because of this. Wife's paying stepson's bills, not paying some of theirs. Somebody else texted in, said the spouse was doing the same thing and went with gambling and didn't pay the bills and ruined their credit history or credit rating. Tell me, Ted, when it comes to a marriage now, I'm not talking about the emotional part of it, but I'm talking about the legal, civil part. I know that's separate accounts doesn't constitute financial infidelity, but it would seem like if you do have this business partnership, I don't know how it makes sense to have separate accounts. Thoughts on all of that?
It really depends on your specific circumstances. It used to be that everybody would just combine everything. Now, most people are keeping at least some of their money separate. In fact, it's most common among Gen Zers. About 9 in 10 Gen Zers in live-in romantic relationships keep at least some of their money separate from their partner. 70% of millennials do so, 59% of Gen X, 52% of boomers. We're talking here about yours, mine, and ours mostly, where you combine some and you keep some money separate, some money together. But to each their own. I mean, you just really need to figure out what works for your circumstances, I would say.
Any final thoughts on this?
Gen Zers are really fascinating, by the way. You know, we see they're the most likely to commit financial infidelity. Two-thirds are doing so versus half of millennials, a third of Gen X, a third of boomers. You know, on one hand, Gen Z is supposed to be the share-everything generation, right, on social media, and yet they're also keeping a lot of secrets, and yet they're also telling us that financial infidelity is even worse than physical infidelity in many cases. So Gen Zers have a lot of contradictions about this. Some of the problem, I think, is people are getting married later. They're getting set in their ways with their own incomes. It's just getting harder to mesh that with someone else.
Thank you.
We need to get better communicating about money.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate it. Back in a flash, WWL.
With certain things, but then like when it comes to other things, we don't trust them, right? And what I'm hearing from what you're saying about Gen Z is maybe that trust is just not there on the financial end, but they may trust that person in other ways. So that's the area of development that they'd have to work on in their relationship. Otherwise, it's going to falter.
Bring the audience into this at 504-260-1870. And in a lot of ways, I think, Elizabeth, as I saw your book on the bookshelf the other day, and I took it down and started thumbing through it, and I'm thinking, you know, if Elizabeth has gone through all of this, maybe there's no need for you to go through it yourself, right? I mean, that's the whole
exactly.
idea behind the book, right?
That's the whole idea, too, to save people the pain of going through things that I've been through and other people have been through that I've learned from other people that just doesn't work. It's not effective in a relationship.
Picture Elizabeth down the road and she's saying, just so you know, there's a big hole there. Oh, and by the way, there's a snake coiled up here. Oh, and when you get a little bit further down, there's there's one of these things that punctures your tires. So be aware of that. You may as well take the advice. It's kind of like almost like a Google Maps kind of like, right? You kind of show them where to go, except maybe a little bit more accurate, because Google Maps once took me from South Louisiana to North Louisiana through Arkansas, which I was not very happy about.
And, that is not good.
No, but you know why? Because there was poor communication, and everything that you're talking about really comes down to communication, does it not?
It absolutely, you know, communication is the bedrock of relationships, and when you think about money, and our relationship to money is not so unsimilar to other relationships we have. Like if you have trauma to maybe having a parent that had some kind of, you know, abuse issue, then you are going to be a little more heightened in your awareness around it. So I feel like with the money thing, a lot of the challenges couples have is because they come into the situation not having an understanding of how each of them see money. And sometimes they are in it deeply before they realize, oh, my God, I married someone maybe who's irresponsible for money and I'm more frugal. Or I married someone who likes to do things with money that can hurt our financial future. And they don't want to be, you know, transparent about it because they just have that kind of behavior where they like to gamble or they like to do things with money that the person who may be more, you know, conservative with money is just in disagreement with. So I feel like these conversations need to happen sooner and earlier in the process of getting to know someone because money is such a huge part of a relationship, right? It's going to dictate how you live, how you want to retire, how you want to raise your children. And if you have kids together, it's going to amplify your money issues.
So,
right.
So if you're, go ahead. Finish. Yeah. No, finish your thought.
No. I was just going to say it's going to amplify your money issues if you're coming from two different places in general. Not that that can't be overcome, but if it's just so diametrically opposed, it's going to be a source of contention and conflict, which is why I think you then see people committing financial infidelity.
I sweated through the Super Bowl last night waiting for the over.
Me too.
Waiting for the over. Did you bet the game?
I did not bet the game. I should have because I have really good instinct around these things. I love football, by the way.
What are you sweating about?
Because it's funny. You would think like I have a family member in the game, married to one of the athletes or something. I just feel nervous because I know so much is on the line. So much work has been put into place. So I get really amped up about it. But did you bet on the game and did you win?
I live alone, so I can do what I want with my money. And I was all
no
in.
Judgment here.
I was all in on this over. Okay. I was all in on the over. And after what I went through and I won, I'll never bet again because I'm still a little bit nauseated. I would rather have had oral surgery than what I went through last night. But here's the point that I'm making, and that is, have you ever been served with divorce papers or had divorce papers? Have you been divorced?
No.
Okay.
I've been divorced, but I haven't been served with divorce papers.
So I'm an older guy, and when I got, I rather not older, but when I was divorced, I wasn't like a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. I was a grown man. And what shocked me was after being married all that time to see blank v. blank, and I realized that I was dissolving a partnership. Now, let me take a break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we can talk about that because I don't think how do you manage the unicorns and the rainbows and the love and the puppies and all of this stuff with you're putting a business together here is what you're doing and you're forming a partnership. And how do you balance that? How do you keep the romance going while you're still running the partnership with the business and the money, if that makes sense to you? We are talking to Elizabeth Overstreet, relationship expert and love strategist, about financial infidelity. Have you ever done it? I'd like to hear from you at 504-260-1870. And how do you handle the finances in your house? Because I don't know how you can be married without kind of having everything together. And it goes back to communication. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. Talking to Elizabeth Overstreet, relationship expert, love strategist, about financial infidelity. 40% of couples do it, especially Generation Zers. And Elizabeth, here's the thing. How do you form a business, which is a marriage in a way because it's a partnership and it depends on what state you live in and so forth, and yet I'm going to pledge my fidelity to you. I'm going to pledge my love to you. You're my soulmate, blah, 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 all of rainbows and ponies, and I don't mean to make fun of that at all, but we are forming a business partnership here, so how can you keep your assets separate? I don't see how that can work. Talk me through.
Okay, so I read a fantastic book, which I totally recommend to your audience, and I am not being paid to promote this book at all, but I believe in giving people resources, and it's called If You're in My Office, It's Too Late. And it's written by a divorce attorney. Yeah. And it's written from the vantage point of what he sees goes completely off the rails in marriages and what people should do proactively. But by the time, of course, you're in a divorce attorney's office, it may not go in your favor, right? Sometimes people don't go through with it, but sometimes people do. My point is, one of the things I love about his book is we need to normalize that marriage is partially a business. I love you, right? When you marry someone, you're committing to love this person out of a billion people on the earth. But at the same time, realistically, you do want to be proactive about finances versus having to be on the other end where things usually in a divorce are very tenuous and difficult and usually are not going to work to your favor because there's so much arguing going back and forth. And I always say this, the lawyers end up making money and other people end up making money, but you're losing all the things you guys went into this relationship to build for your family, for each other. And that's the sad part. So that being said, I think one thing Gen Z is trying to do a little bit more of, and I think this could apply across all generations, is having maybe a prenuptial agreement in place. Or even if you're married, a postnuptial agreement, meaning you put something financially in place after you're married. I think it's a hard conversation to have because people react to prenuptial agreements in all kind of different ways. But I really think it depends on like how you come into the marriage, what you have at the time of the marriage, you know, how you're looking at finances. And I think it's a way to build protection into the marriage. And what I mean by that, and I grew up, my dad was a financial planner. So I was around a lot of people planning their futures, planning their finances. And I saw that like when it was normalized, and even though people may feel like it can make someone upset, if you're doing it from a place of protection and with the best interests of each other, I think it could work out pretty well, especially in situations where it's very lopsided. Like you meet someone who's grown a business and they've been very successful in this business and they built this business before they met you, right? And you're coming into the relationship and maybe you don't have that to offer, but you're going to be with this person, you're going to have children together or whatever, right? So you're going to help with the household. I think it's prudent and it's okay to have a conversation about like, you've built this before me, but what we build during our marriage, that will be more of us, right? Because it's almost giving fairness to the fact that this person has had this entity of things they've done outside of you, but it doesn't mean they're neglecting you and they can still put protective things in place for you. So people have all kind of prenuptial agreements. And in that book, the lawyer talks about that, but mm-hmm. I think that's a starting point. Just being honest about it, talking about it. And if someone is really going to flee from that, like if they're so, you know, they're so resistant to talk about finances, that's probably a red flag. Because that means they could have other issues, you know, of why they're looking to marry you, especially if it's a situation of financial gain.
Go ahead.
No, so I think we should normalize having these conversations because at the end of the day, a marriage is a legal agreement. There are legal considerations and it is easier to enter and much more difficult to exit. From a legal perspective,
nobody wins a divorce. Yeah. The lawyers, the only people who win divorces, I guarantee you that. So let me ask you this.
Yes.
When it comes to communication and being honest and straightforward without taking and sucking the romance out of love, whether it be with physical needs or emotional needs, how do you keep any type of mystery there with love, with a relationship, whether it's, again, physical, maybe it's emotional, maybe it's financial, knowing what the other person wants and so forth, without it becoming a negotiation?
I think very carefully. I think it's how you frame the discussion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to go into it and say, hey, my money's the most important thing to me,
right?
You know, and if you don't do this, you're not going to do ultimatums. I think it's a conversation. I think it's like, hey, how do you feel about how we're planning for our future? What does that look like for you? What would make you feel comfortable? Here are some things I'm thinking or giving consideration to financially. And this is how I want to make sure you're taking care of in this process. And I am confident we're going to be together, but things can happen. And I just rather us talk about this from a vantage point of where we're in love, we love each other, and we're looking out for each other's well-being. So I think it's in the framing and the way you set up the discussion, because I think it still could be talked about and still not negate the romance part.
So, but what about the actual romance part of it and communicating what one, and I got a text here and I got to be careful how, because, you know, it's family friendly here and the text is a little explicit, but how do you, when it comes to what restaurants you like to go to or what activities you like to engage in, how do you know what's negotiated, and how do you know what is just attraction or just that the two of you is meant to be together in a romance kind of way? I'm trying to choose my words carefully here,
yeah,
Elizabeth, but I think you know what I'm saying? No?
I think what you're, well, so reading between the lines, yes, you could tell me if I'm right. I think that it is hard, I think, for people who have money to sometimes, can we just say that? If you have money, I think
it's not about, this is not about money, I think, is what the text is about. Mm-hmm. I think what they're asking is, how do you know when it comes to compatibility? Let me phrase it this way, and I think it just clicked in my head what they're trying to say. Is compatibility natural or is it negotiated?
Both. Okay. I think there's a natural aspect to value alignment. And there was something else I was reading about that. Like sometimes we look at people physicality-wise, we talk about that, but we don't think about emotional fit. So emotional fit is looking at, like, do their values align with me? Like, if we are going to get married and we're sharing money and finances, are we on the same page about how we see finances? Is this somebody that sees spending a lot of money as, like, a higher priority versus the person who might be like, I want to retire quicker, mm-hmm, so I really live a more simplified life? How are they able to, like, emotionally regulate themselves? You know, so that's more emotional fit. Like, can they deal with difficult circumstances and rebound? So I know I'm digressing a little bit, but mm-hmm, I think this is, it's a bigger conversation of, like, can you have a conversation, A, about money without it becoming tenuous or difficult or where you feel shut down? Are you guys on the same page or are you complementary? Because sometimes there could be one person that's a little more frugal in the relationship and one person that's a little more impulsive. But those two people, if they learn to appreciate one another and lean into one another, they can actually reach a nice medium. Because I think sometimes you could be too frugal and sometimes you could be too impulsive, but sometimes impulse can help you to have some good experiences as a couple, right? If it's done in a respectable and in a balanced way. So I think it's about, can you have the conversation? Does the person shut down when you're having the conversation or are they open to having the dialogue? Can you reach some compromise? All of those things are important.
When it comes
to money.
Well, and beyond money, when it comes to basic compatibility, somebody else texted in, Valentine's Day is coming up. They're trying to meet somebody. They've gotten off on the wrong foot before because they've been too blatantly honest. How do you draw that line, Elizabeth, between, it's like, I guess it goes back to the negotiation part and then the communication part where, well, if we're, maybe it goes to speed dating. I don't know where, if we're not going to be compatible, we may as well find out now. Or do you just have to be,
yeah,
patient? Do people make mistakes where sometimes they think they might not be compatible, but if they give it a little bit of time, they will, or the other way around?
I think that you have to have honesty and candor. I think that disagreements are a part of a healthy relationship. And the more actually you could be directive with the person that you love, that actually means you're on the right place. And if you listen to couples who've been in it for a long time, who are happily married, a lot of times they'll say, oh yeah, I can shoot it real straight. like I can be very direct with my partner. They hear me. We're not offended. Like they put something on. Nope, that's not it. You know, like they can have those conversations because they've grown their relationship through having difficult, sensitive topics that they've discussed and they've learned to navigate through that. So for the person who feels like, man, maybe I was too blatant, maybe you were for that person, but maybe you need someone who can embrace that and help you. Like they could receive it, but also they may give you feedback on it. That's the person that's vested in you. So I wouldn't blame you for being too blatant. It just may have been the wrong person on the other side. Now, if you're consistently hearing you're too blatant, yes, that means you need to have self-awareness around it. But I do often feel, too, that when you match with the right person, it just kind of works. It's interesting. Like, they accept things about you because it's something about maybe the majority of what you have to offer, they're okay with that. And they see the deficits, but they're like, yeah, I'm good, because mostly what I like about this person, they have.
Real
and then
quick,
they give you the feedback, yeah, on the deficits.
Before we let you go, real quick, somebody texted in. This is a good question. Is there really somebody out there for everybody?
I think so, yes.
Really?
Like, I don't, you know, yes. There was a show called On the Spectrum. I didn't get to watch all of it, but it was about people with autism and how they found love. And, you know, having autism, I have someone in my family that has autism. It's hard socially. Mm-hmm. There's some social things and cues they don't always pick up on, but they still are a person with feelings, right? And so I say that to say that, like, I look around a lot of times and I see some of the most interesting couple dynamics, and I do think there's someone for everyone. It's a big, big world. Sometimes it's just timing, meeting that person at the right time. It's you being in the right place to attract that person. Because sometimes we attract what we want, but we may not want it because we are in a place where we're like, I'm not going to date. I'm not going to be in a relationship, right? So a lot, there's so many factors that play in it. But absolutely, do I think there's somebody for everyone? Yes.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Appreciate your time, Elizabeth Overstreet. Happy Valentine's Day. Relationship expert, you bet. Love strategist. Her book is, tell me again.
Can be messy, but you don't have to be.
Love can be messy. You don't have to be. You can go to ElizabethOverstreet.com. And the other one she mentioned is If You're in My Office, You're Too Late, written by a divorce attorney. 940, big news about Children's Hospital. And I'd give you the correct title of it, but I'd give away the news. So we'll hold on to that when we talk to Lou Fregoso, until we talk to Lou Fregoso, CEO of Children's Hospital, when we come back. 940, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10, big news announced last week about Children's Hospital, as it was formerly known. Lou Fregoso joins us now, CEO of Children's Hospital. How you doing, Lou?
Good morning, Tommy. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Tell me what's going on here with the Mannings and the involvement and how big this is and what it means.
Well, I think the commercial said it best, two great Louisiana legacies coming together to help change the health of a generation. Bottom line, this is about helping more kids, and the Mannings were excited to want to partner with us and help tell the story, and we're just really excited about this next chapter, Tommy.
When you say transformational gift, what does that mean, Lou?
You know, it's one of the things I love about the Mannings is their humility. So we've kept the details of the partnership confidential. And really what it's about when we think transformational from our perspective is telling the story, making sure everybody across Louisiana and the Gulf South knows what's happening here so we can help more kids. Tommy, you've been here before and you've seen the investments that we've made in the recruitment from a physician and a staff perspective, the community programs that we've started to get out there and help kids where they're at, whether it's Thrive Kids, 180 schools, 100,000 students, or building the largest, most comprehensive behavioral health program in the country. I think when Archie and the family came, there really is the number one question was, how do we help? How do we get this story out so families know that we have this here, so they have access to it and they can get the help that they need? And I think that was really a powerful part of the conversation.
How did this whole thing come about? The Mannings approached you, or the Mannings have always been friends of Children's?
Yeah, they have. They've always been friends and supporters of ours. And I think as we've continued to transform, and as you know, Tommy, I mean, we've been the one and only freestanding comprehensive children's hospital for the great state of Louisiana. And certainly in the last 6 years, the investments we've made to really put ourselves on the map on a national level, they've taken notice. And they started coming to the hospital and they were looking at all of our programs. And we just sat down and they just asked the question, like, how do we help? And this is where we kind of, and this is where it all kind of came to be. Then, everybody started talking about brainstorming and how do we partner together and get this story out. And I think the Mannings obviously give us a national recognition immediately. So being able to tell the story nationally as well as locally here in the region. I think one of the things we want people to know, if you think, I'll give you two examples, Tommy. So cancer and blood disorders. We talked about this last time you were here. We have one of the most comprehensive programs in the country. We're one of only a handful of children's hospitals in the country that has access to a cure for sickle cell disease. We're one of those hospitals. We want people to know that. I think not enough people know this story. And so you still have people from Baton Rouge and north leaving the state for their cancer care when they can stay right here. Care closer to home is always better. They don't have to incur that additional burden. So making sure, so them helping us tell that story is incredibly powerful. And I think also here, just from a local perspective, making sure that people understand the difference between a freestanding comprehensive children's hospital and a boutique department of pediatrics that's run by an adult hospital. People need to know the difference. So when they need the right care, they're coming to the right hospital, like a real children's hospital versus just a department of pediatrics.
This is the difference between Target, and forgive me, Lou, for reducing it to this, but it's the difference between Target having a sporting goods department and a store that sells exclusively sporting goods. Is that accurate?
I think it's exactly accurate. The other analogy I give you, Tommy, is, you know, urgent care versus an emergency room. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think everybody, you know, sometimes you can go to an emergency room for, you know, flu and colds, and you also go to an urgent care for that. But when you have a traumatic injury or you need specialists, where do you want to go? You want to go to an emergency room that's trained to do those things. And I think for us, you know, we're the only pediatric trauma center in this city. We've been proud to serve our community. And I think the biggest thing we want is people to know, you know, what the treasure that they have right here in their city, in their home state. And also for people nationally to know this, we're a comprehensive children's hospital that serves all children, regardless of their ability to pay. That has been our mission for 70 years. Only kids and yes to every child, every time, regardless of their ability to pay. And we're a comprehensive children's hospital. We're not just a specialty hospital that does cancer. We do all of these things. And I think it's a really beautiful story that's 70 years in the making. And the next chapter with the Mannings is going to be really powerful as we continue to march forward and help change the health of a generation.
I'm no Manning, but you know what I think of y'all. I go into my own pocket every year when I go out there. Tell me about what's on the horizon, Lou, for Children's Hospital next 5 years.
Yeah, I think exactly that, Tommy, is one, telling the story loud and proud. We've built one of the most comprehensive cancer and blood disorders. We want to make sure all kids are getting the care that they need. They're staying close to home. The same with the Heart Center. And I think also from a community perspective, one of the key things that differentiates us, Tommy, as a children's hospital is the work that we do in the community. A lot of children's hospitals do the stuff in the hospital, some of the medical and surgical. We do all that, plus we're out with behavioral health, out in schools, 180, 100,000 students. We have suicide prevention programs. We have gun violence prevention programs, Tommy. We're doing all of these things. And so we want to double down on our efforts in the community because that's how we're going to move Louisiana from last in pediatric health outcomes to being a national leader. And with the Mannings at our side telling that story, I'm incredibly optimistic and proud of our next chapter.
I mean to put you on the spot. You have Eli or Peyton yesterday in the kick of destiny?
I had Eli.
Did you?
No question about it.
No,
yeah.
Really?
I had Eli.
Okay.
Hands down. Right. He's the Dragon Slayer. I mean,
well,
he's the only guy to beat Tom Brady twice in the
true.
Super Bowl. So, you know, when he's clutch. I love Peyton, but, you know, Eli, he beat Tom Brady twice.
Tom Brady still didn't get over that, man. I'm going to tell you what. He was talking about it yesterday. Thank you, Lou Fregoso. God bless you and y'all do
Thank
over
you, Tommy.
At
Children's Appreciate
Hospital.
Him.
You bet.
Thank
Lou Fregoso, the CEO of Mannings, Manning Family Children's Hospital. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Noel Norman here on WWL.